Hey there, are you ready to build a fitness business that becomes a true income-producing asset? Then I welcome you to the Fitness Business Freedom Show, brought to you by Fitness Revolution. I am your host, Justin Hanover, and we have over 15 years of experience building thriving fitness businesses, and we are committed to sharing our knowledge and expertise with you. You can expect to hear proven business foundations and frameworks, success stories from our coaching partners, and guest experts to give you straight answers for your biggest questions. Doesn't matter if you have an online business, fitness facility, or operate as an independent trainer, you are in the right place to grow your business and create the personal freedom you desire. Welcome to today's episode. I'm your host, Justin Hanover, success coach with Fitness Revolution. Now, before we dive in and bring on today's guest, I wanted to share a little bit about what you can expect to hear and who I have joining me today. So today I have the pleasure of speaking with Tony Gentilcore. And Tony has been a personal trainer and strength coach since 2002. He is one of the co-founders of Cressy Sports Performance, where he served as a coach from 2007 to 2015. He now owns and operates his own personal training studio in Boston, Massachusetts called Core. He's also a prolific writer, with his work routinely featured in publications such as TNation.com, Men's Health, Women's Health, and the Personal Trainer Development Center. In addition, he's also the co-author of The Complete Shoulder and Hip Blueprint. This was just seriously a great conversation with someone that not only has done well in his career, but is having an impact within the fitness industry. We dove into his business and he broke down how he structures his actual service and operates his facility in a way that best fits his lifestyle. Then we tackled the writing side, where he shared tactics around improving your writing skill and how to better utilize this approach within your business. So this is going to be a powerful conversation, one that I know you're going to be able to pull a lot of good things from. So with that being said, let's go ahead and dive into this conversation and get started with Tony. Today's episode is brought to you by Fitness Revolution. So you started your fitness business and been in the game now a few years. You might have even seen some good growth over those years. But now you feel stuck. You feel like the momentum you once had just isn't there and you don't know how to get it back. Should you be focusing on your marketing, your sales, or your team? What is the next bottleneck to focus on that will allow you to break the chains holding you back? That's a great question. And one of the biggest skills as an owner is to be able to understand and identify the next biggest issue to keep your business moving forward. And this is exactly why Fitness Revolution has created our proprietary needs assessment to allow you to quickly see where your business stacks up and receive immediate feedback on what to focus on next. It's a quick 10-question assessment that will be able to provide valuable feedback to get past sticking points and hit your next goal. Whether you feel stuck or frustrated with your current progress or just want to dial in what's working already, this assessment is the first step to making that happen. I invite you to head over to the show notes where a direct link to the needs assessment will be, and you can easily access it there. Now, let's jump into today's show. Tony, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to spend it with us, sharing your journey and insights to help other gym owners out there.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. And note to self, I should probably take that 10-point needs assessment.
I would love to have you take it.
I would be curious to see like what my needs are.
Yeah.
It'll probably come back like complete nightmare. You need all the help you can get.
I doubt that, but knowing is definitely half the battle. And it's having that awareness.
I see what you did there. Well played, G.I. Joe. Yeah. Well played.
Damn it. I didn't think you would see through that. But let's focus on you and give our listeners a quick perspective, like a 1,000-foot overview of like how you became the Tony that we're speaking with today.
Oh boy. Well, it all started back in, 1985, watching G.I. Joe cartoons and Transformers and more cogent to the point, a lot of Commando, Sylvester Stallone, a lot of Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, I couldn't tell you how many times I watched Commando, Predator, Rocky.
Oh yeah.
I watched those movies many, many times as a formidable pre-teenager. And that kind of led to my interest in lifting weights. in conjunction with sports. I was I played many sports as a kid growing up in very, very rural New York, in the Finger Lakes region. And you know, I eventually targeted on baseball and just kind of saw the cross pollination of, okay, I want to throw harder and hit a ball farther. I think getting stronger might help me do that. And so that kind of led to my foray into the industry, just because I liked lifting weights. I never had aspirations of becoming a personal trainer, strength coach. You know, I wanted to be a professional baseball player, et cetera, first. Once that part of my life was over, it made a lot of sense for me to enter that industry, because that's really what interested me, and like learning how the body moves and how to help people get stronger, learning anatomy and physiology, functional anatomy in particular. I entered the industry in 2002 as just a run of the mill commercial gym trainer, corporate fitness trainer, for the first, if I recall, 5 years of my career. I was like a fledgling trainer, like traveling, you know, gym to gym. And then that was the same amount, the same point in time when going on to internet forums was a thing and going into chat rooms was a thing. And and that's where I met Eric Cressy and a lot of other formidable, now well-known people in the industry. He and I connected, you know, kind of like kindred spirits in terms of our lifestyle and, you know, our interest in fitness. And then that eventually led me to moving out to Connecticut, which was a weird situation, because at that point, this is circa 2006 or no, 2005. I left the Syracuse, New York area and moved to Connecticut. And I had to tell my parents, like, hey, I met a guy on the internet and I'm moving out to Connecticut to start this job at a gym in Ridgefield, Connecticut. Wow. So it was slightly awkward at first, but
I can imagine.
It panned out. It turned out okay. Because then, you know, Eric and I eventually ended up moving to Boston, where we hooked up with an old friend of his, Pete Dupuis, and we opened up Cressy Sports Performance in the summer of 2007, where I was a strength coach there for 8 years. You know, and that was kind of when I started building my own personal brand underneath the umbrella of Cressy Sports Performance, started doing a lot more writing and presenting, and kind of spreading my wings in the industry and developing other revenue streams and expanding my horizons, for lack of a better term. And then I left in 2015 to begin my own small personal training studio, here in Boston, Brookline, Massachusetts. And been doing that very successfully since 2015. And I'm actually in the midst of expanding that footprint as we speak. Just signed the lease last week. So maybe someone needs to knock some sense into me. I'm not sure, but that is happening. So that's the thousand foot view.
Awesome. And it's always also really cool to hear the different paths and stuff that people have taken to get to where they are now. There's always a leap of faith in the process of how you molded and got to where you are. Cause it's like,
sure. I always tell like people there's a bit of luck. There's a bit of luck involved. I mean, certainly there's skill and aspiration and, you know, desire and all that, all those important adjectives we want to use to feel self-important. but there's a degree of, you know, everyone receives or gets help along the way. And a lot of that is luck. You know, it just so happened I was lucky in that, you know, I crossed paths with Eric and several other people and John Romaniello. And I was able to write for T Nation pretty early in my career. And Mike Robertson became a good friend at an early age. And, you know, we kind of like our respective brands and careers kind of grew together. And you know, that I feel very fortunate that I was able to connect with those guys early on in my career, because I was certainly very lucky, you know, just being surrounded by a good group of individuals.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's something you can't replicate that.
No, no.
And I feel like also too, that area too, is just, there's a lot.
Oh boy, Boston, Boston's no joke. I mean, it's, I often joke, because I mean, you know, prior to the pandemic and now that we're kind of a little bit looser, you know, I do get a lot of fitness professionals that come observe shadow. And if especially if they're coming from outside of Boston, it's usually like the triage they hit up. They'll hit up me, they'll hit up Cressy Sports Performance, they'll hit up Mike Boyle, Strength and Conditioning. They might also hit up Mike Reynolds' place out in Waltham, Champion Physical Therapy and Performance. Yeah. And then, you know, not to mention, I have many colleagues within the city that run very successful gyms and facilities. So there's no shortage of quality coaches in the Boston area. So that's another lucky thing that ended up happening, voting in my favor for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because that's definitely going to raise the bar up for you when you're around people like that.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's dive into, like, I want to talk about core first.
Okay.
And then we'll, like I said, like, talk about the writing side of things. So in terms of like core, like you mentioned, obviously you've been running that successfully, since 2015. I was wondering if you can kind of share with us exactly how do you have that business structured? Like, what is the setup with it? What services, stuff like that?
You know, I don't want to sound like my whole career is predicated on luck, but this is another scenario where luck kind of came into play here. So I was at Cressy Sports Performance for 8 years. And my wife and I, we ended up getting married in 2015, got engaged in 2014, married in 2015. And around that time, you know, she and I started having a conversation together. Like, okay, where do we see our respective careers going? She's a psychologist. I'm the strength coach. I was very happy and doing very well at Cressy Sports Performance, but had hit kind of like an upper ceiling of like my earning potential there. You know, I knew that, I mean, there were times where I could just as easily stay home and write an article for T-Nation and make the same amount of income as if I went and coached for 8 hours. So I just started, in my head, I started percolating ideas like, okay, what can I do to kind of spread my wings? And I, you know, I joked before we start recording that, you know, there were a few blog posts I wrote on my website saying I never want to own a gym. That's the furthest thing from my mind. I just want to show up and be a good coach. I'll let Eric and Pete handle all the business stuff in terms of lead generation and handling all the hassles of that. I just want to show up, coach, and leave. Something came up where you might be familiar with the name John Goodman, who runs the Personal Training Development Center. So he was in town and he was staying at my place and we were kind of hanging out for the weekend. And I started mentioning how I'm kind of playing around with the idea of like maybe on the off days that I wasn't at CSP, maybe doing some of my own training here in the city and just kind of like getting my feet wet in terms of like, okay, what could I do here and still coach, but kind of do my own thing. And he mentioned to me that there was a woman that contacted him that was like a mile from my apartment who was looking for somebody to sublet the space. She was an orthopedic surgeon that had a side hustle doing some PRI stuff, postural restoration institute and rehabby stuff with runners. And she was looking for someone else to come in and utilize the same space when she wasn't there. So I met with her cause I was like, yeah, I will trade in a 45-minute commute for a 1 mile commute any day of the week. Like, please, please sign me up. I was like, okay. So after discussing things with her and mentioning to her, like my needs were like, okay, I'd want to bring in a squat rack. I want to bring in some ample weights and barbells. And cause I'm going to have people lift heavy stuff. I'm not doing foo-foo-y prehab stuff, which I'm not against. I'm just like, I want to get people strong.
Yeah.
and she's like, yeah, of course. And so I started doing that and I made the decision to leave CSP and say, okay, I'm gonna start my own thing here in Brookline. And it wasn't too intimidating because I knew right out of the gate that I would have 10, 15 people ready to go to train with me right away. So it wasn't like I was starting from zero.
Yeah.
You know, I could use my career capital and quote unquote clout to say, hey, who's interested in working with me in Boston? It wasn't too hard, you know, and I don't say that to be a jerk, but I had spent the previous 10, 11, 12 years of my career building a reputation and a brand. So absolutely. To get to the point where I could pull that off, if that makes sense.
Definitely.
So fast forward 6 months, the woman who I was subleasing under eventually said she was leaving. She wasn't renewing the lease and asked if I wanted to take it over. So I put pencil to pad and did some numbers. And I said, well, if I got one or two coaches to sublease under me, I would actually be ahead. I would actually be making, you know, I would be in the black. And that's exactly what I did. So, you know, fast forward, now we're in 2021. You know, prior to the pandemic, I believe I had five or six coaches that were subleasing the space. And it's a tiny space. So We're talking 500 square feet. So it's very tiny. And I do a semi-private approach. So meaning I basically took the model from Cressy Sports Performance, which is kind of like a semi-private approach. Well, it's not kind of, it is.
Yeah.
Where I'm working with 2 to 4 people at a time. They're all working off their own programs, but mine's just kind of on a swivel during a session. I call it coaching triage. So, you know, if I have a client doing squatting, deadlifting, et cetera, that need my attention, I can focus on them. And then, but you know, the other ones doing like push-ups, like, yes, I'm there. I'm in the vicinity, but it's not like my eyes have to be on them for that particular exercise.
Yeah.
But my head's on the swivel for an entire hour. And I'm working with, I love that approach. Like, I just think for me, it keeps me fresh. People can work off each other's energy. My clients love it. It's kind of, you know, the price, semi-private training is slightly cheaper than doing one-on-one. So it incentivizes them to say, hey, that's kind of cool. I get it at a cheaper price point, but it allows me to scale my hour. So yes. I can work with 4 people at, you know, certain costs as opposed to just training 1 person. And it's worked really well. And I've had a great group of coaches who have subleased under me for the past, 6 years. Wow. And now I'm at a point where now I want to expand to a 3,300 square foot facility that will include a build out for physical therapy, massage. My wife, who is a psychologist, is going to bring a private practice there. So there'll be psychotherapy underneath the same roof. So basically the front half of the building is going to be, you know, appointment only, semi-private or one-on-one personal training. And the back half is going to be showers, changing rooms, but then office space for massage, physical therapy, psychotherapy.
Oh, nice.
And I know that model works at a small scale. Now the question is, will it work at a larger scale? And, you know, I've done the math over and over again, like, okay, it's going to work. And I think, you know, the coaches that are already with me are going to come along, and I'll be able to recruit other ones to come in. And, you know, I've already got a few PT friends who are interested in doing hours throughout the week, and chiro friends who are interested in coming in. And I just like the, I just think there's, I like the idea of this all-in-one wellness center, where people can come in and train and you know, get strong and work on mobility, you know, work past injuries, et cetera, work on their goals. But they also have access to physical therapy when they get dinged up. And if they want to work on their mental health too, they have an opportunity to do that. And, you know, I think it should be pretty baller, at least in my head, it's going to be pretty baller.
So matters most, as long as you believe it, that's the biggest thing. You have to believe it, but it makes sense. I mean, like those hub thing mentalities, things, and you've seen it in different business sectors. It makes sense for people to kind of come to one place and be able to get multiple things done. Like you see it in like a big thing now is like the co-working space, and like, and how like they're creating these co-working facilities with like different things that people would do within a day in one place. Mm-hmm. And a big thing, obviously, being able to work. So I think similar to that, it's like being able to go to one place, have like your wellness experience, depending on what is currently the focus for you, being able to handle all in that one place. So it makes sense.
Yeah. And I think another reason why I need a larger space too, is like the current space, again, 500 square feet, like at currently there's only one coach in there at a time. You know, my schedule's maxed out. I know the other coaches would love to have additional hours, but you know, the way the schedule lines out, it's like, if you book out the window, like you're the only coach there. And I know they're very much interested in expanding their hours. So the larger space will allow that. And not only that, there'll be more than one coach on the gym floor at a time, which when we were at Cressy Sports Performance, anyone who's walked into that facility, there could be anywhere from 3, 4, 5 coaches on the gym floor, along with 35, 40, 50 athletes. So there's usually a 5-to-1 ratio. And I've kept that mentality with my own business. Like I like the 5-to-1 ratio. I think it's everyone still gets a lot of personal attention from the coach. They're kind of feeding off the energy of their other people, like, you know, encouraging each other and like working off each other's vibe. But, and they don't feel they're getting, they don't feel invisible. Anything more than that, I feel becomes a problem. Then, you know, if it's 6, 7, 8, then that's more of like a group class that I'm not really interested in. So, That makes sense. You know, I like the idea too. Like one of the things I miss the most from being at CSP is being around the other coaches on the gym floor where you can bounce ideas off each other. Like, hey, I have this client. What do you think about doing this? And, you know, mm-hmm. so I very much am looking forward to having that back at the larger space. Cause I know, you know, selfishly it keeps me honest as a coach too, like to be able to bounce ideas and, you know, programming thoughts off of the other coaches. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's all part of the development and making sure that you're staying sharp and like obviously offering the highest level of service that you can, because that definitely is a downfall, obviously, of the one-on-one experience between a client and a coach. And then also if you're the only coach there at a time, I mean, it's you can kind of get stuck in ruts.
It can be awful sometimes, but yeah. That's few and far between. Like, I mean, even yeah. when I was working one-on-one, I mean, I can maybe think of, I've had thousands of clients in my career. I can think of maybe five that I felt like throwing my face into a brick wall rather than train them. So it's so rare. It's yeah. literally so rare for that to happen. But yeah. And this is not to say that one-on-one training is dead. I'm not one of those people. No. Yeah. But in terms of scalability and like use of the space, like I just feel like semi-private is more of what the industry has already kind of leaned into. And, you know, I just think, especially if you live in the city where expenses are higher, just cost of living is higher. It makes a lot of sense. So, So, you know, I've had a good experience with it, but I certainly know that one-on-one training is not dead. So I hope no one is interpreting that as me saying like, oh, it's a waste of time. Cause it's not, cause I still have many colleagues who that is their way of doing things.
I think at the end of the day, what matters most is you find the way that's best suit for the life that you want to live. I mean, yes. that's what matters at the most. I mean, like there's multiple ways of being successful. None is wrong or right. It's just what way is in alignment with how your lifestyle, like what lifestyle you
want to live in. And I leaned into that because like when I started dating my wife, who again is a psychologist, like I am an introvert through and through. Like I get very drained in social settings. Like I can be on, like I do a lot of presenting and workshops. I mean, I can't be like this recluse that doesn't like to talk to people. Like I can be very animated and I feel like I'm a pretty good presenter. But when I'm coaching, it is kind of presenting. The music's really loud. I'm coaching people up on their squats and deadlifts and chains are rattling. And, you know, by the time I'm done, like I'm mentally exhausted. Like the last thing I want to do is talk to people. So, I did have that thought process. It's like, okay, well, I could coach for 4 to 5 hours and work with 12, 15, 20 people during those 4 to 5 hours, or work with, you know, 8, 9, 10 hours one-on-one, like, and be an awful coach at the tail of those, like an hour 7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
So again, I feel I'm a better coach in the semi-private format because it's just less, less mental energy for me to kind of recharge. I need that alone time and book reading time and writing time and movie watching time to kind of recharge. I basically just did the math when I opened up the small studio. I was like, okay, how much money do I need to make in order to pay the bills and, you know, put stuff in my SEP IRA and all that stuff. And how many hours will dictate that? And then, so I just did the math and it worked out to right now I'm probably between 20, 25 hours a week. But Monday, so I do a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 4 to 8 PM. And then I do Saturdays starting at 8 in the morning and I go to like maybe 2 or 3. So Saturday is my longest day. And the other days in between are more or less administrative days where I'm catching up on writing programs, getting presentations ready, doing podcasts, stuff like that. So it's not like, you know, I'm taking Thursdays and Fridays off. I'm still doing which sometimes my clients think that they're like, oh, you're taking, it's like, no, yes. I'm doing other stuff. Yeah. You know, I have a kid and, you know, there's other stuff I'm doing. So, but yeah, we'll see. Like I said, I just signed the lease a week and a half ago and we don't start any build out. Tentatively, the game plan is for late spring, early summer. You know, it's going to be rebranded to Core Collective. It's kind of like, I like this idea of like co-op, like we're kind of helping each other out and this cross-pollination of services. Like I certainly know, like, you know, if I have PT friends that are renting the office on Monday, Tuesdays and Fridays or whatever, you know, I'm going to have clients that are dinged up. I can refer to them. They're going to have clients that can refer to some of the other coaches. And so, yeah, I'm excited, but also very anxious too. Cause this will be the first time I've ever even attempted doing something this big. And we always have this imposter syndrome kind of creep in, like, oh, I'm going to fail. Like, what am I doing? But thankfully I have a wife who is very, very much behind behind me and is very, excited to do it. So, you know, we'll touch base in 6 months and see where I'm at mentally.
I'm sure it will be good because it's always scary to like take that next like big step up, but like you said, like from based on where you're at and like what you've been doing, it just makes sense to do something like this.
And during COVID I kind of did some thinking and I was like, all right, you know, once this is going to get in people's heads, like people are going to be kind of skeeved out to go back to busy gyms. And, you know, I think smaller boutique style gyms are going to be what more people are going to lean into. And, you know, and I know there are many personal trainers out there. Like I've always said that there's this idea or aura in the industry that you've only made it unless you own a gym. And I think that's utter bullshit. Like, I think that's utter bullshit. Excuse my language, but sometimes I can't help myself. And I always tell people, like, listen, that is not the case. You can be very successful working in a commercial gym. However, you know, most trainers who have worked in a commercial gym for any number of time know how hard it can be because you're going to hit a ceiling in terms of earning potential, and you're not really incentivized to work more hours because then you're in the gym and you have a life. And, you know, so I know I really like this idea of allowing a space for fitness professionals to thrive where they can get more of their own pie in terms of like the fees that they charge, and they're getting a bigger percentage of that. So, you know, I feel like I'll be able to provide that. I feel like there's a need in the industry for that. And I'm hoping that at least here in Boston, I will be able to provide that, just a space for competent coaches to come in, and then just be able to thrive and kind of get out from underneath the thumb of the, you know, the commercial gym conundrum.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And it's like, do you just charge a flat rate?
Yeah, right now, because the space is so small and there's only five of us, and you know, there's only so many hours in the week. Like I just essentially, we all have our booked hour, like it's pretty much set in stone, like who's doing what on what days. Yeah. And at the end of the month, I just have my assistant tally up the hours and I send them an invoice and there you go. And it's an hourly rate. It's based off an hourly rate. You know, when I move into the newer space, I'm probably going to adopt more of a tier system where, you know, if you're doing 5 to 10 hours a week, you know, your rent is this much, but then as you do more hours, like the rent's going to be a little bit lower. And eventually I like the idea of just saying, you know, like a one fee for unlimited use. You know, I'm still kind of toying with what exactly it means. Definitely. And I know I bounced ideas off of Pete and Mark Fisher and Joe Dowdell and all my other friends who are very successful business owners, just to see what they feel would be a smart way for me to do that. Cause I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I, an entrepreneur, like, yes, I want to be able to be profitable. I want to make profitable for me, but I don't want to be a dick either. And like, I don't want to be the guy's like, oh, I'm charging you X. I'm 100% sincere that I want other fitness professionals to come in and be able to like, again, like I said, thrive. So, you know, I'm still kind of with the new space. I'm still kind of playing with what that structure is going to be, but that's kind of what I'm thinking is going to be more of like a tiered, incentive. So basically the more you accumulate your own app, more clients, you know, the lower the rent will be on it from an hourly standpoint.
It makes sense. Obviously, if you want to attract somebody who's serious about turning this into like a business themselves. And I was just going to ask, like, how do you, like, is there a process to deciding who you allow to?
Well, again, I've been very fortunate too, that a lot of the coaches that have worked with me at Core, you know, there was one point prior to the pandemic that I think four out of the five were either former coaches or interns of Cressy Sports Performance. So that worked out very well. And you know, I would never say like I'm only looking for coaches that are direct clones of me philosophically. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like there should be some kind of symbiotic like way of doing things there. Like I don't want people to like, you have to train exactly how I want you to train. Like there's got to be some autonomy there. However, you know, the coaches that I've had have been great. Like they have experience. They are vetted by me. Like and at the new space, I'm not just going to let any Joe Schmo trainer in the space. You know, they'll be vetted. Like, you know, I'll interview them and I'll probably ask my buddy Mark Fisher some good questions I can ask. He's always very good at stuff like that.
He is.
And then they'll certainly be a vetting process to you know, earn for lack of a better term, earn the, you know, the right to bring your business to Core Collective location.
That's good. I was just curious where your thought was around that. Because anybody listening, I just think about this type of model. I think
you must bow to me. That's what you have. Yeah. Every day you have, there's going to be a statue in there that everyone has to bow to. And then
that could be interesting. I might be reading about you in other publications then.
Yeah. I'm kidding. That's not going to happen, but me, you never know. Who knows?
On that note, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about more of like the what you're doing on the business side of things. Like, so more important, like say, like what's working with you on the marketing side, and maybe you can share a little bit about what you're going to be doing based on the new space.
Yeah, that's actually a very good question. From marketing, I will say is not my strong suit. It never has been my strong suit because I've always operated under the guise like if you put out good content and you're consistent with it, like that's your marketing. Mm-hmm. And you know, I have close to two decades of content. Wow. So, you know, in terms of marketing, like if I write something, which I there was a time before my kid was born that I was putting up 4 to 5 blog posts a week. Damn. You know, I was pumping out content. Now I'm lucky if I get one good one out a week or every 2 weeks, but at least it's something.
Yeah.
What's nice is that from a marketing standpoint, I have career capital, so I don't have to, I wouldn't say I have to work too hard on it don't get me wrong. It's not lost to me that social media is a big part of marketing, particularly Instagram, TikTok, et cetera. If you're familiar with someone like Andrew Coates, for example, I mean, he's kind of championed this idea, like, you know, putting out daily content, being consistent with daily content that's actionable. You know, one thing I always tell other fitness professionals is stop barking at issues without solving the problem. Like, don't be the guy that like bitches and moans about a certain topic, like whether it's keto or veganism or, you know, high versus low bar back squats, whatever it may be. Don't bark at it if you're not going to solve the problem or provide a problem yourself. Be able to say, okay, yeah, I don't like this thing, but here's what I would do instead, or here's why I like this approach instead. You know, it's got to be actionable and has to solve a problem. And I think from a marketing standpoint, if more fitness professionals just did that, that's brilliant marketing. I mean, it's going to resonate with your potential clients and people who seek out information. You know, you don't come across as like a hoity-toity know-it-all. And you come across as somebody who's willing to change their mind on things, is open to other ideas. You know, another thing that I think is work well with my own marketing is I don't pigeonhole myself into any one corner. Like I feel like I'm non-controversial by personality. Like I'm not a controversial person. Yeah. I think a lot of people play that card on social media to drum up eyeballs and to be performative just for the sake of eyeballs, which I, you know, I roll my eyes at. I can see it from a mile away. I think most people can, but you know, so, you know, unfortunately I don't have any sage words or like, you know, really smart things to say on the idea of marketing other than say like be yourself and be consistent and just put out, you know, actionable, usable content. you know, I think that it's as simple as that most of the time.
Yeah. No, I think that is super valuable because I think we're in a day and age where, especially in the fitness industry, there's so many, say, gurus, like kind of pushing, sure, like kind of like this copycat, paste and copycat mentality of like, and then people lose their identity of like who they are as a business, what they stand for. And there's nothing, there's no sustenance behind what they're saying. Like it's just kind of words. And like you said, it's not resonating with people in a deeper way.
And I think if people, authenticity, being authentic, is an important component of marketing. I mean, you know, I have, you know, I don't want to pat my own back, but I have a very distinct writing style, that, you know, with my writing. Like, yes, I'm writing about somewhat complex topics, you know, how to improve scapular upper rotation, how to break down deadlift technique, how to assess the hips. You know, they're not exciting topics to write about nor read about, but you know, I'm not scared to toss in my personality, pop culture references, movie references, Wu-Tang references, you know, and you know, humorous references. Like I feel like I could be a pretty witty, humorous writer, self-deprecating humor, whatever you want to call it. You know, so I think that's part of marketing, is just kind of coming up with a style, of course, but you know, even when I post stuff up, like for example, the other day I was tagged on Instagram from this woman trainer, and she's saying, "Oh, I never want to own a gym, and you know, however, if I did, I'd wanted to, you know, I'm not going to do it until I can find a space where I can pump Wu-Tang and play EDM and blah blah blah," and like that. But if you look at a lot of the stuff that I post, you know, I'm in my studio, I'm posting like cool exercises or me lifting stuff, and like, yeah, there's usually Wu-Tang playing in the background, and there's a movie on in the background, or you know, I have a, you know, or whatever. Like that's part of the brand, and that's marketing. So you know, I'm even thinking like when I'm doing the build out for the new space, like how, you know, even like stuff I put on the walls, like I'm thinking, for example, I'm a big 90s hip hop guy. And there are many quotes within 90s hip hop that have a crossover into fitness. So one in particular, you know, I say, "No diggity, no doubt" on the end of my Instagram post. And people who get that understand that's a Black Street reference from their song, "No Diggity." But on the, when I open up the new space, and no one better, I swear to God, if someone steals this idea, I'm going to hunt you down. But as part of the new space, I'm going to put in a mural or a quote on the wall that says, "I like the way you work it. No diggity, no doubt." And that's my personality. That's me. Yeah, that's like, awesome. I mean, so just stuff like that is marketing, you know, being yourself. I mean, anyone, you know, I've brought up Mark a few times already, Mark Fisher.
Yeah.
Anyone who's walked into Mark Fisher Fitness in New York City, in Hell's Kitchen, that is the most unique gym
unique
experience
is a good word,
you will ever walk into. Like, first of all, you it's impossible not to feel good about yourself when you're in there, because they are constantly reinforcing like positive behavior and like commentary. Like it's possible not to feel good about yourself in there. But yeah, I mean, it is a very distinct and unique environment. And they are being them, you know, I mean, where else, what other gym are you going to walk in and their trainers are wearing capes and holding dildos in their hands? Yeah. Like there's nowhere. So,
no, that is for sure.
But it's very serious training. I mean, they're talking about Mel Sif and PRI and breaking down squat. I mean, it's very serious training, but to their credit, it's kind of absurd at the same time.
Yeah.
So I think anytime a fitness professional can kind of lean into their self and be authentic, you know, I don't think you have to market. You're just being you.
No, I think that's a very good point, because like part of, like you said, like marketing is helping people see something and then resonate something with it.
Sure.
So like whatever that is, what you said, it's if it's seeing a quote from you, or like how a coach is dressed or whatever. I mean, like you want them to feel a certain way and think of something. And I mean, like that's what powerful marketing is. Is your control, like kind of, it's persuasive. So it's helping people like train them to think a certain way. And like you said, being consistent with your content and being like finding your unique message and how you want to portray that is obviously going to allow that to happen. But if you're after just trying to do what everyone else is doing or what you see other people doing, it loses its full power, you know, because it's not authentic to you.
Yeah. Anyway, I often say that it's never been easier to get your stuff out there, but it's never been harder to have it actually be absorbed and read and have eyes on, you know, because we're all after each other's attention now. Everyone's a celebrity on social media now. Everyone has a platform now. Yes. So I just think the more true to yourself you can be, like, and I don't know, like, far be it for me to tell somebody not to be performative and be what's the word I'm looking for, to be a jerk or that's not the word I'm looking for.
controversial,
whatever. I'm really good with words, by the way. This is what happens when my kid's home from daycare and I can't get my work done. But you know, far be it for me to tell someone not to do that, because if it works for them, it works for them. And there's certainly people out there that we can all think of who do a very good job of being that. And, you know, however, I know for a fact they're not like that in real life.
Yeah, that's awkward.
And it goes, or I don't know, like, just be you. I just find the more authentic you could be, the better off. Then you don't have to play any shenanigans.
Yeah, and I think it's a more enjoyable process too, because then you feel like you're not living these two lives.
But I understand how it's hard. It's hard not to be enamored by that, because social media it's just grasped us, and we can't let go.
No, that is very true.
It's here to stay.
It's definitely a double-edged sword. So now, like, more like talking about obviously like the writing side of things, like with that being an area that you like to push into, like, how do you feel? Like gym owners maybe could be tapping into that even more.
Well, I think, you know, I'm a little bit biased in this. I think the better writer you are, the better you're going to be able to communicate. Cause I don't think, you know, the written word is going to go away anytime. Like, I know, and I know it's like popular to say now, like, oh, no one reads anything anymore. You know, we have 2-second attention spans, which I don't disagree with. But maybe you're just a shitty writer, and that's the reason why no one, you know. So, and like with any skill, it takes practice. I look back at the early stuff I wrote, and it's awful. And my writing process took me forever. If I had to sit down and write 500 words back in 2008, it would have taken me forever. But that's just how I rolled, and I got it done, and I did it, you know. But it's just that was my process. And even now, like, I wouldn't say like I'm a super quick writer, but I'm better at it. Like, I have a better idea of flow of writing and telling a story.
You have a structure behind it.
You know, exactly. Making it seem like it's pretty fluid. I always tell people, like, if you can write how you talk and make it more conversational, it's probably gonna be read. So I do think as business owners and gym owners, whether it's, you know, writing a blog, whether it's writing a tweet or an Instagram post, that is writing. That counts as writing to me. But I think the better you are at it, you have to practice. I mean, it isn't something that's just going to miraculously happen. I mean, I have fitness professionals many times reach out and ask, like, oh, how can I start writing for a Teen Nation or Men's Health or, you know, whatever. You know, I hate to be crass, but I say, well, you need to stop emailing me and the 7 other people you sent this email to the same question and start writing something, just even if it's 200 words a day. Like, it doesn't even have to be on fitness. Like, write a movie review, write why, you know, your favorite, I don't know, protein shake recipe. I don't know. You have to start somewhere. And then eventually you just get better at it. I mean, it's like any other, it's like training your muscles. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Did you, Well, did you always enjoy writing?
No, not at all. Okay. Right. There's a popular quote. I forgot who said it. I'm going to say it, but it is not a direct quote for me. Yeah. It says, I hate writing, but I love having written. The process of writing sucks. It's, for me anyway, because I don't label myself a writer. Like there are people out there that are a writer before they're a fitness professional, but I'm a fitness professional before who can write coherent sentences. So yes, I'm a writer, but I don't label myself a writer first. And my process is not, again, it can be painfully slow. Like I'm not just someone who can just tap away on their keyboard and do a massive brain dump and then go back and edit. Like I am like a sentence by sentence guy. That's I rarely ever write a table of contents or like a rough draft. I basically go off the top of my head.
Yeah,
that's just how I do it. That's how I've always done it. So in that sense, it's awful at times.
Yeah,
to basically start from scratch and be like, okay, here's what I'm going to write about, and I just do it.
So what inspired you to want to get better at it then?
Well, I think that was the introvert part of me. And also early in career, I definitely saw it as a way to establish other revenue streams, like getting paid to write. Like, I mean, I wasn't paid to write out of the gate. Like I wrote my website for free on my own for years before I was paid, to write content. But then that also that the all that writing and then eventually being able to write for Men's Health and Teen Nation, et cetera, eventually snowballed into being invited to do workshops and present in person. And, which outside of COVID, that's a big revenue stream for me. Yes. And then eventually doing digital products with my, like what I do with Dean Somerset and the Complete Shoulder Hip Blueprint. I just saw it as a way to like, okay, I want to get good at writing. I enjoy it and I am somewhat good at it. And I just saw it as a way to me, okay, I can broaden my horizons and, just develop other revenue streams and building my brand that way. And that it's worked out great. I mean, I can't say that, I would do it much differently. Like I've never been comfortable in front of a camera in terms of like doing YouTube videos and doing tutorials. But if you put me in front of a computer, assuming I have time, if you put me in front of a computer screen, if I can go off into a coffee shop and just give me 3 hours and just say, okay, I'm going to write an article on core training or whatever. That to me is introvert heaven for me. I put on my headphones, put on my deep house music and I tap away. I get a lot of, and then once it's done, like, yes, the act of writing is awful, but once I'm done and I click publish, I love it. Cause then I feel like, okay, I did something. I accomplished something today. I created something today. And that makes me feel good. So does that answer your question?
Yes. No, definitely. Cause I wanted them to hear, like, because like a lot of people say like, oh, I'm not a writer, I don't do this. And, but like, you don't have to be.
None of us are. Started. No.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm a big fan of reading books on the writing process. So there's several books I like to recommend there. One of which is, On Writing by Stephen King. Fantastic book. It just basically describes his writing process. So I love reading books on, I'm not reading books on grammar and syntax and all that. I'm not that much of a nerd on writing, but I do like reading how the writing process from other writers, like their process. Then there's a little bit of validation there. Cause at one point I forgot who I was reading. They kind of described me like, there's like, oh, I go sentence by sentence. I'm painfully slow. Like I was like, oh my God, that's me. All right. I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
So just even reading books on the writing process, is valuable. Reading in general helps you become a better writer because then your vocabulary improves and you learn word usage. You learn style of writing from other authors. I'm sure everyone has favorite authors they like to read. I'm not just saying fitness authors, but there's a reason for that.
It's by design.
Even doing a lot of reading is another way of becoming better at writing. But at the end of the day, at some point, you got to start.
Yeah.
Definitely. Unfortunately.
And I like what you brought up, how it opened up other doors for you, because I think that's one of the big pieces of writing. And it's also, yes, it could be a great marketing source for your business, but it's also a great positioning piece and positioning sure. you in a certain way that's going yeah. to open up other doors.
It's been, like I said, I mentioned earlier how it snowballed into me being invited to do workshops and seminars and presentations. And I mean, I have to pinch myself in the face sometimes at the places I've presented at. Like I've been in Australia twice, and I've been all over Europe and all over the United States. Like if you would have told me back when I was, I don't know, a sophomore in college, that I'd be being paid to travel around the world to talk about deadlifts, I would have been like, what are you talking about? Are you like, there's no question in my mind that never would have happened if I didn't start with writing first and getting my content out there. And then, and of course, like presenting I was terrified to do that at first. I had to kind of get used to that too, of being in the spotlight when I'm presenting.
That's another skill set.
Yeah, exactly. For me at least, everything started, the base is writing, and then it kind of like branches off from there. Like I would have a hard time. I think any person would have a hard time being competent in other media outlets, whether it be video, etc., if they weren't somehow a good writer to begin with, and I say good in quotations, like writing is just communication.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think writing and writing to me is never going to go away. Like that's going to be kind of home base for communication no matter what. I'm a bit biased in saying that writing is my go-to, but I certainly understand that that's not everyone's strong suit, but like I said earlier, like writing isn't just writing a blog post or an article. It is social media too. It is writing emails, newsletter copy. Like that is writing too. So that all counts.
Yes. Actually, I was just kind of going to ask you about that too, of like obviously given the time of year and we're heading into a new year, I always like to kind of get perspectives from people of like what they feel like, where things are going and stuff like that. So do you, based on, I mean, your perspective and what you've seen and everything like that, do you see writing or any type of written content playing a bigger role in gym owners and how they run their businesses? Or
to me, there's always going to be that base level of writing. Cause I mean, you have to write your Instagram posts. You have to write I know they're not called newsletters anymore, but whatever they're called, that is, you're writing those, you're writing emails to clients and stuff like that. You're writing to, local newspapers and magazines for exposure.
I was just going to say, like, you would say that it's good to have at least some level of skill set or knowledge.
Yeah. Like storytelling. I mean, certainly this idea of, being a good writer, or a writer where that people like want to seek to learn information, you know, there's a degree, the backbone of that is storytelling. And like you're poking at a problem, like, oh, like, you know, like you said, you brought up the new year, like everyone's going to be interested in losing weight at the beginning of the new year. And there's nothing new that can be said there.
No.
There's nothing new that can be said there. However, what is unique is your style, your use of the words, the way you articulate the information, how you articulate it, whether, you know, whether it's in a humorous way or very science-based, however it may be, there's an audience for all of it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where I feel like the value is never gonna dwindle.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it behooves any fitness professional to kind of tap into that, like what your, in terms of branding is, like just kind of tapping into that, okay, style of storytelling. John Romaniello is the king of that, especially in the fitness industry. I mean, that guy, I hate him so much. He's such a good writer, but he would call himself a writer first, and he is a fitness professional. I mean, I haven't spoken to John in a few years. I don't even think he trains people anymore. I mean, maybe he does, but he's certainly out there doing writing workshops and really, really going to town and telling people the importance of storytelling. I don't think that's ever going to go away. It's not a new trend, of course. Like, I don't have a sexy trend for 2021. Like, this is the time of year where I start getting emails from editors of or writers of fitness professionals. Oh, what's the new trends of the fitness industry? And I want to be like, go lift something and be consistent with it. Like barbells work. You don't need a watch to tell you like how much weight to lift and like when to do it. Like, just go pick up a barbell and do that. Like, that's never going to stop working.
No.
So, yeah.
But that's people always want the shiny, sexy things.
Yeah. And that's honestly, that's just not how I roll. I'm pretty old school. I mean, I'm not that old. And I just say, go barbells and dumbbells work. You don't really need fancy equipment. You just got to push yourself. And, yes, there's psychology stuff in there too. Like, I'm not one of those people. Just lift more and move less, or move more and eat less. I'm not one of those people. Yeah. But there's some truth to that. Where it's like the stuff that's worked for centuries still works.
No, absolutely. And it's kind of funny that we've almost gotten so far away from just the basics that is almost refreshing to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
And it's, that's the truth. Cause I mean, I feel like everyone's after like just the next, like whatever gimmicky thing that can come out, but it's like, it's just bring it back to the basics. Yep. And I think it's the same thing in business. Like, just bring it back to the basics, and I think you'll find a lot more success with it. But in terms of wrapping out the writing conversation, could you just reiterate maybe a couple steps for someone to kind of jump into the writing arena of like what to focus on first or start exercising?
I think I said it before. It's like you got to make it a habit. You got to set up some form of schedule. Now, and I'm not saying you have to make it daily. But if you're interested in using writing as a way to grow your brand and communicate your ideas, you have to formulate some sort of habit, in terms of like Pete, my ex-business partner, Pete, for example, with his website, maybe 2 years or prior to COVID, he told himself, listen, once a week, I'm going to write a legit baller blog post for gym owners. And he did it for maybe even 2 years. So he had 104, legitimate blog posts that honestly he could probably just make that into a book.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's like, and say here's the guide to gym ownership. It's just this blog that I wrote for 2 years. But looking at his schedule, work schedule, family schedule, he knew that he could definitely do 1 day a week of like a legitimate writing. Prior to me being married and having a kid, like I could do it 4 to 5 times a week. Yeah. You just have to have an honest conversation with yourself in terms of formulating, okay, a schedule, a writing schedule of when you can do it. Like, I'm more of a morning writer than I am. You ask me to try to write something after coaching all day, that's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So if I am going to do some writing, it's usually mid-morning into the early afternoon time. So even time of day is going to come down to it. But then at the end of the day, it's just, you gotta begin somewhere. There's a blog post I wrote a couple years ago where it was like tips on writing. I even did a presentation, for the trainer, the Complete Trainer's Toolbox, where I did like an hour long presentation on fitness writing. So it was a collaborative effort. It was me, Dean Somerset, Megan Calloway, Sarah Duvall, Luke Worthington, my wife, Dr. Lisa Lewis. It's called, again, the Trainer's Toolbox. We each did 2 webinars. One of mine was on fitness writing, and like tips to become a better fitness writer. So I would encourage people to maybe seek that out too. But a lot of what I've already mentioned is in that presentation. So I'm not one of the, go listen to the, but that gives some people some like,
perfect. And like, as you guys keep hearing me say this, like, re-listen to this if you need to, and then take notes on what you are actually going to do, and then do it. Like, don't just listen to this, like, listen to what Tony's saying, and then have it go in and then collect virtual dust and not do anything on it. So if this is something that you're serious about, it's like, listen to some of the steps that he just laid out, take some notes on what really resonates with you, and then, like he said, make a realistic action plan. Like, don't just say like, oh, I'm going to write every day. It's like, no, if that's not realistic for you, don't do it. Like, set yourself up for success and actually put something in place that's going to stick and have the effect that you want it to have.
And what's also realistic is it's going to suck.
Yeah.
What you write is going to be awful, especially if you're just starting out. This kind of bleeds into one of the first tips I got when I first started writing for other sites, like T-Nation in particular. My editor at T-Nation, first of all, he told me two great things. One of which was like, people want to be informed, but they also want to be entertained. Infotainment. He called it infotainment. And I thought it was such a brilliant term. And that was kind of like the root or the seed that was planted for me in my writing style. It's like, oh, I'm getting permission to be me. Like, I can put humor into fitness writing and like not take it so seriously and make it more entertaining. And so people will want to read it. So that's one tip. Number two is like, whatever you end up writing, however long it is, whatever, you're going to chop 20% of it. Go back and chop 20% of it. Cause there's a lot of superfluous words that we put in. We're repetitive. And the way you edit yourself there is to read it out loud, because if you read it out loud and it sounds wonky, it's going to sound even wonkier when someone else is reading it. So, so those are three tips I just gave there.
There you go.
You know? So I guess I had something relevant to say on it.
Yeah. I love it. Excellent. Lucky for you guys. But I mean, this has been an amazing conversation as we work towards wrapping up. As I mentioned to you before we hopped on, I always like kind of end with like kind of getting your perspective on things of like, if like say if a gym owner came to you looking for support based on your journey and your perspective on things, what do you feel is the most important thing they need to hear right now?
Are you sure you want to do it?
Hey, sometimes that's a legit question.
Because again, I'm not lying. There is this connotation in the industry where it's like, okay, I haven't made it unless I own a gym. Mm. And I would caution you from thinking that.
Yeah.
Because I remember Pete saying this time and time again when he was mentoring other business owners or potential business owners or gym owners. Listen, you're not going to buy a bunch of fancy equipment and then turn on the lights and then people are just going to miraculously show up. That's not how the industry works. Yeah. Because most people could give two shits about the fancy plates that you bought and barbells that you have. A lot of what's going to make you successful is your soft skills of coaching, your communication skills, like, you know, and stuff like that. Like, my wife talks about that ad nauseum. She's probably somebody that you should invite onto your show. Justin.
We have a date booked.
Okay. Oh, great. Okay. Perfect. So beat me to the punch.
Yes.
But yeah, like, I would really, really have a honest conversation with yourself. Is this something you really want to do? But then also I would say, don't be afraid to go my route, which is do more of the co-op, independent contractor, subleasing opportunity. Cause then, you know, like in terms of helping you with overhead. And I mean, I've had some colleagues say, oh, you got to be careful with that. You know, the liability, you know, I've been doing it for 6 years now. And I wholeheartedly have not had an issue with it. I think you just got to do a good job of vetting the people and you got to treat them well. Like you gotta be fair. Mm-hmm. And I think if you just do that, then it's a model that works very well. It's a very, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. Mm-hmm. And it's worked really well. And it's less intimidating in terms of like, you know, like I said, like instead of stressing about monthly overhead, oh my God, I have to pick up more clients. Like you're not there using the space. Well, there's somebody there using it when you're not there. Like, and you're making money off that. So, you know, you, of course, in that scenario, you have to cross your T's and dot your I's in terms of knowing that you got, you know, the proper liability insurance and, you know, you have all that and set in store. But I do think it's a model that's growing in popularity. And I think more and more potential gym owners are leaning to that, is that more of that co-op scenario. So those would be my two pieces of advice, I suppose.
Love it. I think that's a great way to end the conversation. And I just want to thank you again, Tony, for taking the time to spend with us, sharing your insights, your journey, and the wisdom that you've gathered over the years with obviously the fitness professionals and gym owners that are listening to this podcast. And really just appreciate too what you've done in the industry. I mean, your contribution and helping others move forward has been fantastic.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And hope we talk to them soon. You'll have a nice conversation with my wife. So I look forward to hearing that.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that too. But if anybody wants to say ask you some questions or continue on this conversation with you, where's the best place for them to connect with you?
My website, that's the hub, is tonygenlacora.com. So that's all my articles, that's social media, everything's there. So there's a contact link there. So that goes right to my email. So that would be where I would tell them to seek me out.
And do you have a newsletter that you do?
I do, but mine's more kind of like a review of the week. So stuff that I post I send it out at the end of the week. Oh, look who's here. And then I also use it as to say announcements for upcoming workshops and seminars and stuff like that. So must be the movie's over, huh?
Yeah.
People who are listening, it's just my little guy. He's watching The Grinch. It's over. Yes. Give me 1 minute. Thank you.
But
doing it live.
Yes. Hey, that's life. But I think that'd be a good resource too for people to hop on your newsletter list.
Yeah,
too.
And I don't take it. I try not to be too aggressive with my newsletter. I'm not someone who sends out a daily newsletter. It's literally a review of the posts I put up that week. And then I also use it again as an organic way of just letting people know of products coming out, workshops coming up, stuff that I like, just stuff like that. So I try not to be too aggressive with it, but that's I guess newsletter is still the right word to use. I don't know if it's something different, but
I say newsletter.
I still run with it.
Yeah. That's what I say. So as long as people know what you're talking about, I guess that's all that matters. So thank you for that. And we'll be able to have your link in the show notes as well. So if any of you are listening to this in a car or working out and you want to make sure you don't miss that, no problem. That link will be there so you can easily access and connect with Tony, which I hope you do. If you feel inclined at all to ask more questions, that's how doors get opened up and opportunities are created. So please feel free to reach out to Tony. And last thing,
I'm an open book. Yeah. I'm pretty good at answering emails. So don't be shy.
No, definitely. I mean, that's what it's about. It's why we do this podcast, is to share experiences. Because I think that's one of the powerful ways of learning, and also just connection. It's a relationship industry. And on that note, I just want to thank you, the listener, obviously, because we wouldn't have a show if you weren't listening. So we're happy that you're looking for ways and resources to improve your business. That's important as we grow on this journey together. And now, like I said before, take what you learn from this and what applies to you and create your action steps and how you're actually going to utilize what you learned from this episode today. With that being said, thank you again for joining us. And I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Fitness Business Freedom Show. Thank you and take care.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode on the Fitness Business Freedom Show. On behalf of Fitness Revolution and myself, we are thrilled you are looking for ways and resources to move your business forward, and we are honored to be that source for you. If you would like to receive more business building support from us, be sure to head over to the show notes and join our subscriber list and stay on top of all the industry insights that matter most to you. Now, before I close out today's show, if you found this episode beneficial in any way, I just ask you to leave us a simple review to help other gym owners find us and discover this show. Thank you so much, and I will see you on the next episode of the Fitness Business Freedom Show.